Nothing like a new year, is there? The excitement, the countdown, that magical moment when the clock ticks over. Of course, what we celebrate at New Year's is a lot more significant than a number on a clock or a page on a calendar. What are we really celebrating? Nothing less than our connection to the cosmos. Another turn round the sun. Our place in the great wheel of the stars and planets. That's not what we usually think about at New Year's, and according to cosmologist Brian Swim, that's a shame. Swim told Steve Paulson that it was the invention of artificial time, clock time, that cut human beings off from the rest of nature.
When we first began to invent these mechanical clocks, and then we formed church towers, I mean the town tower with the clock telling us what time it is. See, what happened in this is in Europe in the Middle Ages is that then humans actually no longer looked at the sun to see what time it was. They would look at the clock. And so that has proceeded. And over the last couple centuries, we have invented a form of life that's encased in artificial time. It has its benefits. I mean, the great benefit of artificial time, mechanical time, is efficiency. Because now we can organize people all around the planet to be performing certain kinds of tasks that results in all this productivity. But something amazing is lost too, and that is an organic movement with the rhythms of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've said that with the invention of the mechanical clock, we've been more and more attuned to technological time, and to some degree, we've lost track of the time of the sun. Do you pay much attention to the sun?
I do. I try to organize my day around the... we say the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun. One of the most accessible ways that we can approach this is to realize that the sun is not rising. I think it's one of the great challenges to consciousness in our time.
Right, the sun isn't moving so much. It's the earth that's turning.
The earth is turning. And by greeting the sun in the morning, one can actually have the experience of the planet rolling, the planet spinning, the planet twirling. You can experience it very profoundly at dawn and dusk. But then during the day, you'll discover that you'll regularly return to this realization that we live on a planet and that we are soaring around this star that is a million times the size of Earth. That's one of the things I do is that in the morning time when I'm reflecting on the sun, I simply will rehearse that. I'll simply tell myself that sun I'm looking at is a million times the size of our planet. And then so you begin to get a sense of its vastness.
Do you do anything to mark the end of the day, the coming of darkness?
Precisely the same thing. It's to, when possible, to just to say goodbye to the sun. And there's an amazing sense of sadness as I feel the earth roll away from the sun. You see, it's like there's a sadness of like, oh, that all of that excitement of being in the midst of that energy is ending now. And yet it's a sadness that's tinged with excitement because then we're rolling into the night. And the night is this cone of darkness that we enter into, the earth enters into. And so it's a way of remembering the night world as a different world. You know, the feelings we have in the night are different. One of the great sadnesses is to have night taken away from us because there are ways of knowing the world and the ways of knowing oneself and one's family and one's destiny that happen in the night, and they're qualitatively different than the daytime.
Well, it raises the question of whether cosmology can somehow give us back that sense of awe and wonder about the universe.
Well, I think it can. I really do. And in terms of time, one of the most amazing discoveries of cosmologists is that time at the level of the universe really is a measure of the quality of creativity.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, for instance, this is somewhat of a new idea, but it's worth reflecting on. I can just give you one example that the universe begins, like we say, 13.7 billion years ago, and then it flows forth with all of this energy, and then this amazing thing happens. at a certain point, the first atoms began to form out of the elementary particles. Now, before this moment, there were no atoms. The first atoms that formed were hydrogen and helium. And what is really a stunning discovery is that this moment was the moment when hydrogen atoms would be created. So the entire universe changed form. It went from what we call plasma into a form of atoms. So that is a measure of time in terms of creativity. And then a later development took place when the atoms began to form stars and galaxies. So a galaxy consists of something like 100 billion stars. And once again, we have the same point, is that before this moment, the universe had no galaxies. And the amazing discovery is that there has not been a new galaxy constructed since that moment. So you see, it's like the time to create galaxies. Now, we talk about that as being a billion years after the birth of the universe. But the point I'm trying to make is that, in a way, we're only just beginning to explore. The universe knows what time it is in some deep, mysterious way.
Now, you've been talking about this very long view of time. I mean, really going back to the Big Bang of nearly 14 billion years ago. And I guess it raises the question of where we are in this this great cycle of time. And are we still near the beginning, or are we in the middle somewhere? Any thoughts about that?
Well, I have a thought, and it's slightly complicated, but if you just give me 30 seconds, maybe I can. One of the amazing things is called the law of large numbers, and it is, if you look at the ratio of the fundamental powers of the universe, like electromagnetism and gravity, what scientists have found, it's a puzzling discovery, but they found there's something special about this time we are in. And it shows up in the mathematics. And one scientist in particular came up with this interpretation, which I offer as speculation about our moment. And according to his thinking, that what is special about our moment is that this was the moment, not when life would come forth, or not when the galaxies would be created, or not when life would complexify into complex organisms, but rather, this is the moment when the universe would begin to reflect upon itself in conscious self-awareness. I have to repeat, it's speculation, but it does match the mathematics, and it's for some of us, it's kind of a thrilling idea that, what is the idea? The idea is that the universe has a sense of time and knows what it is about.
What does it mean then for the universe to somehow be conscious of itself?
If the universe knew in some strange way how to expand so that life could come forth, maybe, this is a speculation, that the universe was driving towards not just life, but a reflection upon itself. So how is this playing itself out on our planet? Well, it's within the human beings. We have begun to reflect upon the nature of life, and we have brought forth so much power, technological power, because of this. And it could be, you see, this is a suggestion, it could be that all of our technology and all of the science, all this power, is for some greater purpose. It's for the universe to enter into its evolutionary unfolding now with conscious self-awareness, whereas before that was absent.
Well, you haven't used the word God, but it sort of sounds like that maybe that's what you're referring to in some way. I mean, if you're talking about the universe as consciously reflecting back on itself.
You know, of course, to bring up God, then there would be all sorts of theological reflections from different cultures upon that. And that, I think, is very, very important, but I have no special knowledge about that.
So you're really, you're just talking about this in scientific terms.
Yeah, yeah. It's so fascinating that we see we're beginning to see the universe as an organic entity or a reality that has its own intrinsic timing. And I think that the challenge for the human right now is to enter into this deeper cosmological rhythm. And the most obvious way is to invent a form of humanity that actually is an enhancement to the planet.
You're talking about actually humans evolving to some new stage. I mean, I think there's this general sense that we're kind of at the end of the line here. I mean, this is sort of who we're going to be. But you're saying humans might become something rather different.
See, that I think is exactly the point, as you've said it, Steve, exactly. That I would say that part of the way in which we still live on a flat Earth, all right, and we think that the sun goes around the Earth, we still sort of think that on some level, unconsciously. Another way of saying that is that we also think that humans are fixed. So that what we're discovering is that everything in the universe is changing and evolving, everything. And so we certainly are part of that.
So do we have some responsibility in this to evolve? I mean, I don't know, we probably can't control this, but to evolve in some particular direction?
That, I think, is the crushing tragedy of our time in that, see, we've developed so much science and technology and we've developed a civilization all for the human. In fact, it's only been for a subset of the human. And what I'm trying to suggest is, what if the human has a larger significance? What if really our significance includes the planet and the cosmos? That's the suggestion. And at the very least, what if we need to take seriously our responsibility for these powers as they affect other members of the Earth community?
So you're saying at the very least, we should be better ecological citizens to take care of this Earth.
And to see this as a vast gift, a privilege handed to us by the universe itself.
Brian Swim is a mathematical cosmologist. He runs the Center for the Story of the Universe at the California Institute for Integral Studies. Steve Paulson spoke with him.